Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 274 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host today. And today my guest is Jordan Ostroff. And Jordan is an attorney out of the Orlando area who has a very thriving personal injury practice, which ironically gained in stature and growth during the pandemic, and we're going to hear about how that happened. But he's also, I would call, a serial entrepreneur. He has a marketing company and coaching company that works with other attorneys to build their practice in a way similar to how his was built. He's also a podcaster. He's a speaker. He's been on a number of different summit panels over the last year or so. He and I have danced around each other at various events, and I couldn't be more delighted than to have him on our program today. So without any further delay, here is my friend, Jordan Ostroff. Jordan Ostroff, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a longtime listener, first-time guest, so I'm excited.
Well, it's a delight to have you here. Jordan, you and I have circled around each other at various different summits and platforms and events and congregations of people who have an interest in the kinds of things that we do, but I don't know that we've ever personally actually met, so I'm thrilled to have you on the show. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. So I'll actually do you one further. I was trying to come up with cool names and thought, like, how do you become a legal entrepreneur? And then actually Googled something very close to you. And that's how I first found out about you. And then obviously the Stacey Brown Randall circle, I think, was first. And then the legal circle. So I am a lawyer myself. I run a personal injury firm in Orlando with my wife. And I realized that despite that, I really wasn't an attorney. I was a marketer first. I was the HR department. I was a business owner. And so finally, I committed to the marketing side of everything and then realized that pretty much every law firm has the same problems. And so that from there, I started Legalese Marketing to help them solve the marketing issues that plague firms across the country.
Were you always in personal injury?
No, I started out as a prosecutor. Okay. And then went into criminal defense because that was all that I knew. My wife was a PD, so that was all that we knew. And then eventually we had a discussion very similar to the one we'll talk about today, where we try to figure out what sort of lifestyle we want, which led us into personal injury. And then also there were a couple other great opportunities we had to take over some cases from people that were starting the path towards retirement and whatnot to really give us the baseline of it.
I know that there are lots of markets around the country where, you know, the legal arena is pretty competitive, particularly in a couple of specific areas, owing to the economy of that area. But I happen to know from being down your way and in Florida, that's a pretty competitive market for personal injury. I mean, you guys still have billboards, right?
Oh, I think there's a law that 2/3 of every billboard across the entire state
has to be a PI or attorney, right? Typically PI or family law. So it's really competitive down there. So that adds, and I know all of us feel that whatever we do, it's really competitive because there's a lot of attorneys out there. But I know specifically in the Orlando area, personal injury is a really competitive market. So what made you kind of focus in on that after getting out of the criminal defense world?
Really, it was who did we enjoy helping? And, you know, criminal defense clients and personal injury clients for the most part, tend to be relatively similar. The benefit, though, is on the personal injury side, they're not paying you. And so you don't have to play that game of how do I help somebody who can't afford me, but who needs me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then it gets to really be an issue of I also have to hustle now because, or like I said, there's a lot of competition. And suddenly you found yourself wearing a couple of different hats. Before we get into that discussion, let me ask you about how you started a firm. So you were a prosecutor, then did some criminal defense work. Your wife was a public defender. When you decided to go solo, tell me about that decision process and how you came to that conclusion.
Sure. So my wife and I met in court, which is always a funny story to tell for people that don't know that we're attorneys and then sort of look at us sideways. Started out on opposite sides. She ended up leaving to go into private criminal defense work and then had the brilliant idea of how do you actually potentially help a lot of clients not become clients? So my wife had gotten really involved in the juvenile justice system. Mm-hmm. And from there decided to take a year teaching, which turned out to be not a way to stop kids from getting involved in the juvenile justice system. And so, but when she made the move to teaching, that had her still have nice government health insurance. And so we sort of bandied it about me opening up the firm. And then literally one day at work, I just walked in and was like, all right, guys, I want to honor every commitment I made to you. I'm putting in notice. You tell me how much notice you want. And there we go. And then my wife was like, I didn't realize that was going to come to fruition so quickly.
Aren't we still talking about this? I didn't hit the action button.
Yeah, no. And I mean, it was great. It's one of those things where I think everybody will tell you should have done it sooner. I should have done it sooner, but I made a 3-year commitment. I honored my 3-year commitment. I made a commitment to give 30 days notice. I gave 31 days notice, whatever it was. And so, I tried to do right by my former employer because they did a fantastic job teaching me the law side of it. Yeah. And then I was like, hey, let me become a business owner where I don't know anything that I really need to know. And there we go. And I've never looked back since.
All right. So you make that decision. Part of that usually involves, where am I going to practice? Now, I'm guessing at the time that you started your personal injury firm, we weren't talking about virtual firms in those days, although we may have moved towards that. So typically then you would be deciding, do I practice in an office space or a shared office space or from the kitchen table? What was your process like?
So there was an attorney that I had a pretty good relationship with having cases against each other, mm-hmm. who had an office open in his office, who said he would throw me enough business to make the rent worth it. And he was totally right. And so I had an office from day one. And other than probably that exact situation, I probably wouldn't suggest other people necessarily have an office from day one, but it was very helpful for me.
Yeah. And was he actually giving you overflow personal injury work?
No. It was overflow. It wasn't even really overflow criminal defense work. It was the counties he didn't want to go to, or the judges he didn't want to take cases in front of. So
yeah, well, it's good referral source to have. It's nice to have your landlord also helping you, with the cash flow in order to be able to pay them. It's kind of everybody wins in that situation.
Yeah, definitely.
So at that point, you have some cases. You put out the word that you're going to be taking personal injury cases and you're getting some other stuff from the guy whose office that you're renting. Pretty soon, though, I'm guessing you came to the realization, I got to go out and bring in my own business. And how prepared were you for that process?
Well, for the most part, not in the slightest, although I was an unintentional success enough to have made some connections in Orlando mm-hmm. previous 9 or 10 years before I opened.
Great. And so then how did it go? How did business develop and how did you grow your firm? What were your major challenges?
So the biggest thing for me was I really had no idea where I fit in the overall marketplace. Okay. I knew what areas of law I could do, but I didn't really think about it from the standpoint of what clients inside of the area I wanted to work with. I had the benefit. So I went to UCF for undergrad. I went to Barry for law school, both of those being in Orlando, was a prosecutor in Orlando, opened my first firm in Orlando. So I had some pretty good connections in the legal community. through those things, but without really knowing who I wanted to serve, I was totally spraying and praying and, you know, trying to get referrals from anybody and trying every marketing opportunity I could possibly think of or came across my desk. And so I made enough money to end up super in debt with my firm for not knowing the answer to what I really wanted.
What were some of those marketing opportunities that you wish you had said thanks, but no thanks to?
Well, so I've come to terms with the fact that it was probably a good thing, because I don't think I would have Legalese Marketing, but for all of those mistakes or all of those opportunities to learn. I can tell you definitively, like, nothing worked really well for me. And that was partially, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all my fault because I agreed to it. Some of it was truly my fault. Like, I did not have the systems in place that I needed to support success or to be consistent enough to see what would happen. Other things were, you know, me buying things that never should have been sold to me, but, you know, the other company wasn't interested in my success. They were interested in their sales.
Yeah. And I'm absolutely guilty of the same thing myself. You know, in part it's a shiny object syndrome, but also it's that quest for the magic bullet. I was trying to look for the one thing that would help me, you know, get over that hump. Cause I was convinced that once I got over that hump, it would be smooth sailing from thereafter. That there was a critical mass kind of thinking that governed, you know, my approach to marketing and branding my practice. And I was, like you, scattered all around and really wasn't effective until I had a couple of aha moments. So what were your aha moments? You mentioned about coming to grips with who it was that you wanted to serve. Was that the primary one that kind of gave you guidance?
Yeah. So it came about, my wife told me she was pregnant with our child. So that was 2017.
What a motivator that is.
What a motivator that is when you're already working 60, 70 hours a week, when you're already $200,000 in debt, when you're already firm-wise, not law school, not mortgage-wise. Yeah, I mean, that was a wake-up call of like, what the F are we going to do? Because I also want to spend time with my child who's coming, you know, whatever, 8 months, 9 months down the road. So that was that big moment of figuring out what was working, cutting what wasn't, and really getting on track to something that was going to support the life I wanted to live, not necessarily like financially, but also time-wise.
Well, I think one of the challenges that solo and small firm practitioners have is that there's a lot out there. And I'm not the first one to refer to this as taking a sip of water from a fire hose, but there's a lot out there to absorb and to, you know, and internalize. And particularly when it comes to learning and developing a skill set that you didn't otherwise have, but is crucial to building a business. So how did you go about doing that? You're faced with this enormous debt. You're faced with this impending birth of a child. You got to figure out something. You got to make something work. How did you kind of sort that out? I'm trying to find out, what was the spark that started you on your journey?
So I had the benefit, before I left the state attorney's office, I talked to about 30 other attorneys on, you know, what to do, what mistakes, what guidance. I don't think that I really asked them about the personal life that their firm supported or the time suck that their firm became, but I had enough help from them to know to like track all of my cases. So from day one, I had an Excel spreadsheet of, you know, where the case came from. If it was a referral, who did it come from? If it was from the internet, I try to get a little bit more off of that. If it was, you know, through Avvo, it went through the phone number. And so I really went back through those things. I looked at what was effective, but then I also looked at what were the cases that I genuinely enjoyed and what did they have in common? You know, were they coming from similar people? Were they coming with similar needs? Were they coming from a similar source? And so by going through those really what should have been foundational questions, but a foundation that I, you know, skipped making, I was able to basically recreate my entire firm on the fly around those concepts, which, you know, while there is no magic bullet, like you talked about before, a strong foundation will weather a ton of storms.
Well, very much sounds like the pillars of our friend, Stacey Brown Randall, her program, Referrals Without Asking, where you go through those referral sources and then identify, you know, where your best case, where all your cases are coming from, where your best cases are coming from, who your best clients are, you know, that in keeping with the idea of creating an avatar of your best client.
Yep, absolutely. And so this would have been end of 2017. So I think that was right before she launched her podcast. But when I came across it, I was like, oh my God, this has totally worked for me from the very referral base, which is why I've shared her podcast with every associate I've had, anybody else who will listen to me. Cause I was like, look, this is literally what I went through. Just, it wasn't necessarily 100% referral based, although a large chunk of it was referral based.
And she very much has a structure to her approach as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, all right. So now you've come to grips with, all right, I've kind of identified who I want to be when I grow up. So what were the kinds of clients that you were gravitating towards that you wanted to get more of? Can you quantify that? Was it, you know, motorcycle accidents, so young guys 30 and under, or was it, you know, major tragic accidents or medical malpractice? Or how did you catalog or categorize your caseload?
So for the most part, the two, I'm trying to think of the word, the two lines that we drew between the number of the cases, it was professionals, people who were professionals themselves, because there's that extra level of trust and understanding. There's that extra level of patience. There's that extra level of care involving, you know, their own future,
yeah,
both like professionally as well as personally. And then the other part of that was referrals. So cases that came from professionals. And so that's why I talk about like that side was so helpful to find a lot of Stacy stuff. But then there were also some other avenues that we explored on the more traditional marketing sense that still appealed to professionals. That was really helpful for us to get the kind of cases, or I guess to get the kind of clients that we enjoyed working with, and which also put our firm in the position to go the extra mile in a very specific way for those clients.
So then how did you niche down on that group? Now that you've identified it, how did you kind of focus on those two prongs or those two differentiators and to create more of them?
So it really came down to the more clear that image is, you know, that ideal client avatar, or in my case, like a specific list of 15 or 20 people, that it was, how do you get into their shoes and think like them? You know, they get into an accident. What are they going to do? Who are they going to talk to? What are they going to want to hear from you? What are the things that they don't even know that they need to know, but they need to know it? What are the fears that they have with this? What are the issues that arise for them? And really just sort of, you know, becoming that person, or at least being able to tap into that concept. And then that helps direct you to, you know, what platforms you need to be on, where you need to go, who you need to connect with, how you need to phrase your marketing. It really all comes out of that. And it was kind of shocking to me that I went, you know, 3-something years without that and was still around.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you did that and you started to see some growth in the kinds of clients and kind of cases that you were interested in.
Yeah. We actually shrunk the firm during that process intentionally, cutting out a lot of the stuff that we didn't want, which cut out a lot of the aggravation, which cut out, you know, a lot of the 60-hour weeks, and really went into, you know, getting a lot closer to where I am now, where I work 3 days a week, about 24, 25 hours.
Yeah. And spend the rest of it with your family. So, so here you go, you've now refined it and you've developed a pretty strong firm. Now, did you grow the firm back up? Did you add staffing? Are you still in the same office, or what's the history now of where you are today?
So now we have our own building, a lot more staff than I had at any other point. But the thing was like that discussion really drove the kind of staff that we wanted as well.
Right.
You know, when you're dealing with professionals, when you're dealing with people that have, you know, a professional or a job hit on their accident, you know, you start putting more time into that customer service aspect. So we intentionally take fewer cases. We intentionally spend more high touch with our clients. one, to direct them to the right treatment providers or make sure they're getting what they need from those treatment providers, but then two, also helping them through the other experts that they may need. So like one of the people that I never thought would be so integral to our firm, but has been, somebody my wife connected with who's a car broker. So you get a lot of these professionals, their car's wrecked, they're going through the property damage issue of the car accident case, but they need a vehicle, they need to drive to work, they need to drive around to clients' offices, they need to get all that stuff done. And so he's been an immense resource to literally dozens of clients, finding them, you know, the right fit. So you've got somebody who's, you know, owns a landscaping company, finding them, you know, the right truck that'll haul the stuff that they need that they can attach the trailers to. You know, you've got somebody who's a realtor and get them into a nice vehicle relatively quickly, so they're not driving around in some, you know, beat up loaner or something like that while their car gets fixed. And so it's just been really interesting to see like the little things like that that you wouldn't necessarily think of or wouldn't stand out among, you know, 5,000 clients. But when you're dealing with 100 professionals, they have those little extra needs.
That's just brilliant. It's really an aspect of helping to create raving fans. You're providing that high level of client experience, putting yourself in their shoes and addressing the challenge that they're going to have, which doesn't actually really have anything to do with the case that you're litigating on their behalf. You know, the property damage, yeah, you want to get them in a car, or helping the landscaper keep his business, you know, thriving as you go through the process. But you're really helping them deal with their own lives. And in turn, I got to admit that that concept of reciprocity, they're going to be looking at how you treat them and solve their personal injury case. And there have to be great referral sources after that.
I'd hope so. I mean, at this point, we get about one case referred per every two clients. So if you look at, you know, your average case value to the firm being, you know, $6,000 to $7,000 off of a PI case, well, now really the average value of a client is $9,000 to $10,000 because they're going to, on average, refer a half a client over on top of that.
Yeah, for sure.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works. And we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first free month of your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. This episode is brought to you by Security Plus. Do you ever worry about ransomware, losing client data, or your employees getting phished? You know that 29% of law firms have suffered a data breach of some type or another? As a solo or small firm lawyer, getting hacked can make a crushing impact to the high integrity and reputation that you've spent a lifetime building. That's why I love Security Plus, and I'm excited to bring them on as a new sponsor. It's a turnkey cybersecurity solution built for solo and small firm lawyers like you, who often lack the clarity, time, and skills to protect themselves from cybersecurity threats. Security Plus protects your firm with 8 security solutions. And the best part is that it requires just 1 hour of your time to get everything up and running. So check out this new solution at securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. And that's securityplus.io/Neil, N-E-I-L. You can grab their security checklist as a freebie and lock in 10% discount for life. Again, that's securityplus.io/Neil. Well, I think it's really kind of an interesting approach, because so often when we think about expanding the centers of influence or our referral sources, we're thinking about who can bring clients to us. This is kind of a different way of thinking that you adopted. You know, what can I do on behalf of helping my client? And I think that's really kind of refreshing.
Well, and also then, you know, what happens when those centers of influence become your clients?
Well, yeah,
you better drive that much better of an experience for, you know, for them, or you've lost that referral source. You've lost that center of influence. You've lost that connection, as opposed to, you know, we represent a good amount of chiropractors or chiropractors' spouses or family members, because they know, like, and trust us to do that much better than, you know, just their family member being another number on a file.
Well, again, in that competitive market, I think that's the kind of thing you have to do. So terrific. Now, along the way, you kind of put on all these other hats, right? You put on the marketing hat, you've put on the firm branding hat, and the operations hat. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the HR hat that you wear, the staffing, how you've increased your staffing, and how you went about the process of acquiring new employees.
I mean, totally honestly, and I have the ego or the modesty to share this, so much of it was me getting out of a lot of it, because I am terrible at most things. I have a very narrow zone of genius, and the more that I stay there, the happier I am, the better we are, and the more I get out of the way of everything else, the better everybody else and the business as a whole does.
Okay, so you offloaded that internally?
Yeah, a lot of that stuff. So I connected with somebody on the marketing side who's now my business partner on Legalese, and then we just started offloading, you know, some of that stuff that could be done, which then became, I guess, in-house to another company. But then internally, it was really finding, what do I enjoy doing and what am I good at, and what can I find people who are better than me at? And so the legal work was the easiest one to do that on. And then we started, you know, expanding out from there.
I heard somebody say this week, and I'm sure one of our listeners will be able to remind me who it was, but I heard somebody say this week that when faced with a new challenge, don't ask how can I do this, but ask who can do this for me. And that sounds to me like that's the approach you took.
Very much so. And like, it takes a lot. You know, I think a lot of people become attorneys to be the one to be talking, you know, helping somebody through the biggest area of their life.
Yeah. It's the hero mentality.
And the minute you kill the hero, or the minute you limit the hero to their really, truly unique talents, the better it will be. 'Cause I am awful at meetings. I am awful at hiring. I am awful at billing. I am awful at
all those things. Right. All right. So along the way, then you recognized that, and I know this from talking with you before, that what you were learning in this process was information that lots of attorneys could benefit from. And so tell us then about how legalese marketing came to be, because, and tell us what it is, because not everybody in the audience knows that you're involved with that.
Sure. So legalese marketing came out of me, you know, blowing $200,000 on bad marketing, or I guess spending $200,000 to learn a lot of these lessons here. We take that step back. We really make sure there's a clear vision for ideal clients, for the attorney's role in their firm, for the size of the firm, for the systems, you know, the sales process that has to be in place for, you know, 10 leads versus 50 leads versus 100 leads in a month. And we design all of the marketing efforts around those things. So instead of focusing on SEO or pay-per-click or social media, we focus on how is your ideal client going to find an attorney? And then the answer to that question becomes where your firm needs to be.
Yeah. So tell us about the company itself. What does it offer? What services does it offer? And how do people take advantage of it?
Gotcha. So from us, we are a combination of a fractional CMO for law firms, as well as also executing on that stuff. So for some of our clients, we're just coming in, creating a full overarching marketing plan for them. For other ones, we're doing that and then executing on it. So that has us, you know, doing website work, doing pay-per-click work, doing SEO work, and then doing a lot of CRM automation work. But really, it's us dialing that in or merging those things together in the way that is cohesive for the law firm. So for example, you know, if you're a business law firm trying to target, you know, normal business owners of the, you know, not necessarily the creatives on Instagram, but like a more normal LinkedIn type business owner. So then we'll schedule out a series of LinkedIn posts. We'll run ads on LinkedIn. We'll put together blog posts that are a little bit more highbrow for you to post over there to appeal to that audience. Whereas if you're working with a lot of those creative startups, then we're going to do that on Instagram and make it more image heavy and make those blog posts, you know, more emoji and eye-catching and whatnot to appeal to your audience, both in the platform and the style and the type and the topics. And it's just been awesome to see because I hear from attorneys, one, the success, obviously that part's great, but two, them enjoying it more. Like they're getting the clients that they vibe with the most, as opposed to just getting more clients. And so that's the part that I really like, is the emotional happiness aspect that comes with great marketing systems, not just in revenue, but in truly liking your clients again.
I know also that you spend a great deal of time with the clients, working with them on their CRM and levels of automation to help get the most out of the platforms that they're using. What are you seeing in terms of what attorneys can do, are doing, and should be doing with respect to automation and CRM?
So this is a great one. Clio releases their legal trends report, and every year it's pretty consistent. 68%, I believe it was in the last one. So just over 2/3 don't follow up with leads ever. So you do the consult and then that's it. Whereas pretty much every study finds somewhere between 5 and 25 points of contact needed before somebody hires you. And so we try and bridge the gap between those in a consistent manner so that we don't have, there's still going to be an ebb and flow, but there's a lot less. You know, you talk to attorneys that don't have a system, they sign up nobody that month. So they call everybody back 900 times, then they sign up 10 clients, then they don't call anybody back, then they sign up one client, and then they call everybody back. And when you do it that way, one, you're going nuts, but two, you have no real way to know if your marketing efforts are working, because you're completely changing the entire sales process. So we try and turn it into almost a science experiment where there's as much consistency and as few variables as possible. And then you can see what efforts really make the most sense for the firm. Maybe it's ads, or maybe it's the specific ad, maybe it's referrals, or maybe it's a specific type of referral sources, or maybe it's a specific campaign that makes the most sense, or a service offering. You know, by standardizing the rest of it, it's a lot easier to see the differences.
Oh, it's interesting. I think one of the big trends, and clearly also has to do with media content and, you know, content marketing, video production, blog writing, the whole nine yards. I know you help in that area as well.
Yeah. So we will do all those things, and we try to do those things in a manner where they're trackable. So whether that's putting different call rail phone numbers on the different ones, if that's putting different UTM codes on the different social media posts, And then all of it goes back into the CRM through the same drip campaigns to get them to a consult, to hire after a consult. And so it's just really, we really do our best to try and show you how successful we are in real time to drive success to you.
I think one of the biggest challenges, though, that we still have is that there's so much out there. There's so much need. And particularly, you know, startup, solo and small firm practitioners have a difficulty knowing, you know, where do I start? Where, how do I start to, you know, unravel this ball of mystery? Do you have any suggestions or any ideas of, you know, where's the best place to start to get traction to growing your firm?
So I really think it's coming up with your ideal client, and then you want to find the podcast or course or coaching program or whatever it is that knows that, not type of law, but knows that specific niche as best as possible. And so, you know, if you're very much B2B, there's a lot of great stuff to learn by following Gary Vaynerchuk. If you're very much B2C, there's a lot less helpful things in there. And so you really have to see what people are doing. The thing I love about social media is you can follow anybody on social media and see what they're doing to grow in that respect. So, you know, follow some of the big dogs in your town, the next state over, the next county over that are doing very similar stuff to you, and see what consistently shows up in their stuff, because hopefully it's successful.
All right. So like, give me an example. I'm a family law attorney practicing, you know, in the Midwest somewhere. I want to grow my practice. It's a competitive market, got a lot of systems in place. I got a lot of things going on, but I want to model my practice after the success of some others. So I follow them on Facebook. I follow them on LinkedIn. And then what am I looking for?
So you're looking for, what are they doing that's getting a ton of engagement? Let me back up for a sec. So with your example, family law attorneys tend to be great connections with realtors. You've got, you know, the divorce, the house has to be sold, et cetera. Realtors, I think, are the most saturated market everywhere for anything and whatnot. So potentially for that attorney, you know, I would join the local or get involved with the local realtors organization. I would see what they're doing to market, how they're getting in front of people. I would follow some of the big realtors in the area, as well as the other family law attorneys. And I would see, you know, what are they posting that gets a ton of traction? What are the events that they're putting on that get a bunch of people there? What are, you know, try to take some of them out for coffee, pick their brain, ask them about their, you know, other ads. Are they doing direct mailers? Are they doing pay-per-click? Are they doing SEO? But when you do that conversation, really talk to them about their ideal client, because that realtor who's trying to target people that are recently divorced is going to be a phenomenal referral source for you and a phenomenal marketing mentor. That realtor that's trying to target people, you know, moving here in their 60s from New York is probably not going to have the same ideal client. So they're not going to have the same consistent message. And so you can build these great relationships with people who are all trying to target the same audience in different manners and pool resources in ways that'll drive more success to everybody than you would get otherwise.
Yeah, I know it's a challenge, because sometimes you look at the other successful attorney and you're thinking, man, they're awfully successful. I see what they're doing. I'm not sure that I can do that. So it's how do you sort that out?
Trial and error, my man.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
That's the million-dollar question. They had there was a post I saw the other day on, I think it was Instagram, it might have been LinkedIn, but anyway, and it was like, hey, if you want to be a billionaire, you're going to lose millions of dollars to become a billionaire. If you want to be a millionaire, you're going to lose thousands of dollars to become a millionaire. If you want to be broke, you're going to want to lose nothing to become rich. And so it was such an interesting way to think about it, that like, through all of this, so much of it is trial and error, so much of it is trying things, but the more you understand who you're trying to serve, the easier it is to skip entire concepts. You know, if you're doing estate planning for somebody with assets above $10 million, you can probably skip pay-per-click ads. You know, that's probably something that somebody in their 60s is not going on the internet to Google an estate planning attorney. That's probably a waste of your time. But if you think of, they're probably going to contact a financial advisor, right, or a business attorney or a divorce attorney, then you may spend a bunch of money trying to connect with the wrong people in that area or the wrong side of town or the wrong experience level or whatever it is, but at least that's a better shot at you finding a ton of success.
For sure. And I think also sometimes we think, well, I don't want to do the same thing as that attorney. I want to do something different. And you get caught in that paralysis. And I would suggest that do something as similar as possible to what this successful attorney is doing and then make it your own.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it is genuine and authentic to you, otherwise you're going to swim upstream. But absolutely. I mean, so I wear sandals, shorts, and a polo to work every single day. There are a ton of people that hate it, but I feel more comfortable. And I've had a bunch of clients feel much more comfortable talking to me dressed down. And so when I talk to referral sources, I let them know. And I've had referral sources say, hey, look, there are certain clients I'm never going to send to you. But every client that I've sent to you has raved about how awesome it was to work with the people at your firm. It's like, exactly, because that's who we're looking for.
Right.
So don't be afraid to, you know, upset people and don't try to appeal to everybody. Be you.
Well, listen, Jordan, tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up with anything you've had to say today. And how is it that people do work with Legalese Marketing? Is there a specific model that they follow? Are there options that they would have to choose from?
So to connect with me, the best place is probably on LinkedIn. There's only two Jordan Ostroffs. I'm the one who's not in Boston in sales. I'm the lawyer one. Or on Instagram, I am a lawyer with a life. That's my Instagram handle. To work with Legalese, you can reach out to me or you can go on our website, www.legalesemarketing.com. That's EASE. For now, if you book through there or through me, you're going to get half an hour with me. We're going to talk about what makes the most sense. Sometimes it's us, sometimes it's not. And at the end of the day, I really want you to leave. I'd rather have a super happy not client than an unhappy client. So even if you're just looking to pick my brain, or even if we decide that we're not the right fit, hopefully I will drive enough value to make it worth it for you.
And I know that Jordan, as I said at the beginning, we've danced around each other on other platforms and other, you know, virtual events. And I know that you provide tremendous value to all your clients and have a real breadth of knowledge here. We've only really scratched the surface, and maybe there's a lot more to learn. So I encourage our listeners that if you're at all curious, give Jordan a call or pop in on his LinkedIn profile and ask him a question. And I think you'll be very satisfied with the amount of engagement you get from Jordan, because he's a, you know, I don't say this about too many lawyers, but he's a good guy.
Thank you very much. I am honored to hear that. And that's what I'm going for. I think that we've hit a tough time in the legal market because you've lost the concept of mentorship on the whole inside of a firm. And I have been very lucky to have some amazing people donate a bunch of time and wisdom to me. So if you don't have a mentor, please, 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 I will do my best to help mentor you. And from the LinkedIn standpoint, I am genuinely trying to put out free tips for you to get to the position where you've got $50,000 or $60,000 a year to spend on a marketing company, because that's about the point that it makes the most sense for you to start offloading that work, where your time has suddenly become worth more than your money. So let's get you there.
Let's get you back on, because I'd love to talk about analytics and some of those thumbnail factors and figures that help guide your decision process.
Sure. I would love to do that. I am a big fan of track as much as you can that you are going to make decisions based off of.
All right, Jordan, thanks again. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.